Welcome, Darklings, to Vampire Bites, a mini-sode version of Vampires Ruined My Life. Today, I, narrator Chell, am going to be taking a bite out of Let the Right One In, the TV show.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I have not watched the TV show, so I'm really curious to hear all your thoughts and feelings about it.
I had forgotten about its existence until somebody, one of our listeners, I believe either left us a comment or private messaged us on Instagram and asked us about our opinions. And I said, narrator Tori is definitely not going to be watching that.
Well, we had just finished Interview with the Vampire, and I was kind of like burnt out on adaptations that totally changed the source material. And I was like, I don't think I can do another one yet. I need some time.
And I had no intention of watching it, but then I got curious. And as kind of previously stated in our Let the Right One In episode, I refuse on principle to watch the American film. But I was like, okay, well, I'll give this one a whirl. I just happened to have a couple of days where I could just binge it all and formulate my own opinion. I live tweeted a little bit, and I definitely put my thoughts up on Instagram stories, but I thought a much more informal, formal little mini-sode would be appropriate.
Yeah, absolutely.
First of all, I should say that it is absolutely no surprise that Showtime decided to cancel Let the Right One In, the TV show.
Oh dear. Yeah, that kind of speaks volumes.
Yeah. Not necessarily. I mean, you know, streaming platforms definitely cancel good stuff all the time. Is the show bad? No, it is not a bad show. However, Let the Right One In is a perfectly fine TV show in its own right. But it has no business riding on the coattails of its Swedish forebear. While there are elements of the original story, they are shallow at best. The TV show is more about the dynamic between a father and a daughter and finding a cure for vampirism.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like The Last of Us, but for vampires.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Yes. Very, not to say very much so, because, you know, those two are a found family, whereas these are actual family.
Okay,
like this is, so Ely is changed to Eleanor, and the father is a real father. Like, that is her birth father. His name's Mark.
Okay.
And they have been transient for, I think, 12 years since she was bitten. And they return to their home of New York City is when the TV show starts.
Okay.
We learn that Ely was bit by just some random stranger, or at least we were led to believe some random stranger, but definitely like not, it's not somebody they knew well. I'll say that.
Okay.
He was like a vampire who was definitely like preying on like teens, you know. He bit Ellie and he bit this boy named Peter. So here's the big difference that really irritated me. Ellie has never killed.
Oh.
Yeah. It's only her dad who has ever procured blood for her. So he's been murdering people for to like procure their blood.
Okay.
For her to drink. And she only has to drink like kind of the book and the film, like every, it's not nightly.
Sure.
You know? It's like every three nights or something. So firstly, the whole setting has been changed. A cold, soulless, manufactured suburb is swapped out for New York City.
Mm-hmm.
As needless American adaptations go, this isn't actually a terrible idea. Prefab communities in America are a bit more difficult for a vampire to pick off people in a prolonged format like a television show. Like, it's much more suited to a film, you know, or a short period of time.
Sure, but I kind of love that as a complication, though, in the book. Like, they moved to the suburb, and they've been moving from suburb to suburb, and it's causing problems because you can't kill a ton of people in a small community without...
Well, I'm saying, like, in its original format,
right,
it works.
Yeah.
And also because, like, there's not a whole lot of time that passes, whereas in this show, it's going to be like weeks to months, you know? So that makes sense then that they would go into like a city because it offers the element of anonymity, you know, to maintain suspense. Second, our B plot is actually involves monkeying around with science, like literally with chimps. And I'm like, no, thank you. I do not like this part because I'm very deathly afraid of chimps.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So the same vampire that got Ellie got another lad called Peter, whose rich daddy spent years as like a big pharma magnate trying to find a cure for Peter, who has been declared legally dead.
Oh,
so we begin when like Big Pharma Papa brings in his genius but estranged older daughter back into the fold to take over finding the cure for Peter, because she's actually a scientist and she is a genius and stuff.
Okay.
And, you know, that's the only person that he trusts to be able to have the competence to do it.
Sure.
And she had thought her brother was dead this whole time. So she had no idea.
Yeah, I was going to ask if she knew if he was still alive or
no.
If she knew what was going on. Okay.
No, but like you're like, I'm sitting there and I'm like so confused. I'm like, who the fuck are these people? Because I don't care. And I have to say, I don't care. Like I continuously do not care about these people. Claire, I think, is her name. And I'm just like, I don't care about Claire and her fucking monkeys. You know, like, I just don't care. Peter, I guess I'm a little bit more invested in. And towards the end of this, of season one, Peter and Eleanor do, they are connected.
Okay.
And they reunite, and they're like, hey, I kind of remember you, because they're both part of this astronomy club. And they had signed up for like a mailing list. And that's how the vampire found them.
Okay, interesting.
And attacked them like on their own property.
Huh.
So like while they were outside of their home.
Okay.
Like Eleanor and Peter both, I think, were attacked on like in their backyards.
Wow.
So and the reason why Eleanor was even like rescued was because her father and mom, who was alive at the time, ran out to the yard when she screamed. And they were able to like pull her back into their yard, and the vampire skittered off.
Okay. Interesting.
So, yeah. And I don't really remember with Peter. So, or if they even showed it. So, cause you know, like I said, I don't really care. So in all of this now, people are going, well, what about Oscar? Where's Oscar?
Right.
Well, his name is Isaiah in this, and he gets pushed down to like C plot. And like his importance is finally kind of recognized. He's too sweet. Like he's sweet to the point of like unrealistic.
So, oh no.
Like, you know, like when he gets like bullied and stuff. I mean, he's an adorable child. Do not get me wrong. But I'm like, you know, Oscar is a little bit more well-rounded than this. Like, you know, Oscar's got problems, you know?
Yes, he does.
And he's got, I don't want to say a violent streak. He doesn't have a violent streak, but he has a, like an anger in him because he's been bullied, you know? Whereas Isaiah is just sweet as pie, you know?
Oh, no.
And you're just like, oh, my God, who could ever, like, go after this adorable angel, you know?
Uh-huh.
And he's just sort of, like, too pure for this world, you know? And you're like, okay.
Well, that's funny because one of the things that really draws Ely to Oscar is kind of that darkness and that anger that he has.
Exactly. And they end up being, next door neighbors in the same apartment building. And towards the end of season one, Isaiah knows that she is a vampire.
Huh.
And he's not as like awesome, you know, like he's way more like, oh God, okay. You know, and she has to like reassure him, oh, I've never killed anyone and blah blah blah, you know what I mean? Like it's there's a lot more like moralism applied to this show than I would care for. There's a ton of like religious symbolism and iconography and conundrums, because Mark, Eleanor's father, was very Catholic, or is very Catholic. you know, so there's a lot more, like, religion plays like a really heavy role in it. Which I'm like, snooze, boring.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, but interestingly, Isaiah's mom is given a promotion. She is the detective inspector in charge of sussing out these mysterious murders that are going on.
Okay. So Mark is killing people. He's not just getting blood. He's doing like Hawken did, where he's like murdering people.
Yes, and doing it like with the upside down. And Mark is way smarter than Hawken. So yeah.
Well, he's gotten away with it for 12 years. So yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. So the mom is the detective living right next door to the guy who's killing.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely a
And they kind of have like, they develop like almost like a, they definitely develop a friendship, and it's kind of hinted that maybe like more is developing between them, you know, especially like on her end, like where she's like starting to have feelings for him because he's, you know, he's so sweet to Isaiah. And they start, you know, hanging out in the evenings, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And doing like little outings or whatever, or he'll watch Isaiah, or, you know, he allows like Eleanor to go play with Isaiah at, you know, in the evenings and such.
So what does he tell people about Eleanor? Does he say that she's sick, or what's the
story? Yeah, I believe that she's sick. Like she's got something, you know. And he works at the restaurant that he actually helped open, and he was supposed to be the like the executive chef in charge of. Like it was opening right when Eleanor got attacked.
Okay.
So the only people who know about Eleanor were her parents and then their best friend, who is the owner of that restaurant.
Okay.
So he's like the godfather to Eleanor. I forgot his name. He's actually a pretty cool character. I do like him a lot. And when Mark comes back into town, you know, he's really nervous at first, but he does. He's like, dude, I need, you know, I still need to like keep up a pretense and stuff. And I still got to live places. So I need money. So can I, you know, at least come back as like, just like a line cook. And so, you know, he gives him the job and everything, and they reconnect. And then he sees Eleanor again, who he always loved, you know.
Yeah.
He's known her since she was born. So.
And who hasn't aged.
Well, he knows. Because
he knows that she's a vampire.
Knows.
Yeah.
He knows that she's a vampire. Yeah, he knows. But like the goons and such over at with Claire and like her big pharma mafia that her dad had kind of established. I don't know what the fuck. Like, I can't even explain it because it's so convoluted over there with like B-plot. Like, honest to God, if these people just, like, had a conversation instead of, like, we're playing, like, cat and mouse with each other and thinking that they were the enemy, which they weren't, like, it would have saved some lives.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Like, people die about this. And you're just like, oh, my God, you guys are, like, the end goal is the same, you know? But whatever. I guess they had to create conflict, but then also, like, an actual, like, vampire is, like, running around killing people. So
oh dear.
So,
yeah,
so,
that's a problem.
That's a problem. So yeah, and what like the conflict that definitely comes between Mark and Isaiah's mom, whose name I forget, is that Mark unknowingly, I mean, he knows that he kills, but he didn't realize who this person was that he killed. He killed Isaiah's dad.
Oh, so, shit.
Yeah. Isaiah's dad is a struggling, I don't know if he's an alcoholic or narcotic user, but, you know, he's a struggling addict. And Isaiah, of course, like, loves him and wants him to be involved and such. But the mom is wary of him, you know.
Totally, yeah.
And in, like, the first or second episode, he comes over for dinner because he shows them his three-month chip from AA. And Mark somehow, I don't know, somehow they, like, find each other, like, cross each other's path. And Mark kills him, not knowing who this guy is. You
right,
know?
Totally.
And dad goes missing. You know, Isaiah's like, oh, man, you know, he went missing again. He's not answering my calls. And of course, the mom just thinks, you know,
yeah,
the wagon again.
Exactly.
But then she finds him.
Her
and her partner find him and have to confirm that, yes, he died and he was murdered. And wow, that's weird. And, you know, they found his chip and everything because his chip was there or something. Or they find like another chip with like another murder victim. And they realize that whoever this predator is, and this is actually the vampire, not Mark. Mark just happened to kill this guy. But like the vampire is picking off people who are in like AA or NA. So wow,
that's really crappy luck for Mark that he picked the same group.
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of forgot like how, you know, oh, because Isaiah's dad is trying to be on the straight and narrow, but like he still takes like freelance kind of gigs, I guess you could call them, from shady people. And some of those shady people happen to be like the big pharma mafia that's trying to like, I don't know, lure in the vampire or something. I don't know what the fuck they're trying to do, but like basically, and then Mark's like been stalking them. And I don't fucking know. He was just working for the wrong people. You know what I mean? Working for the wrong people. Mark caught him, was trying to like get info of him. Like, who are you giving like this crazy drug to, you know? Cause it's like, I don't know. It's like gummy berry juice, but like vampires, you know? Right. So, and he's just like, yo man, I don't know. And he's like, I don't know anything. And he's like, well, you got to feed my kid. So, you know, gets the blood for Eleanor. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. So I don't know, you know, a lot of it's like leaked out and I'm definitely not going to rewatch it. So, but yeah, like to me, like this, like I said, like this whole show on its own would have been fine. Actually, everyone's a great actor. Little Isaiah, you know, a little too sweet, but I think that can be directed out of him. But everyone's a fine actor. The plot is actually like decent enough, you know, like I'm like, this isn't like a shitty show. It's just that it has no business being let the right one in.
Yeah. It sounds like it's totally different. Like if I had turned it on and they had called it like, I don't know, New York Vampire Show or something, and mm-hmm. I had watched it, I would never have connected those pieces. I never would have. Living in an apartment next to some kid that she befriends. That's, you know, that kind of is like let the right one in, but that's like the only thing they have in common. So that's normal.
It's literally the only thing they have in common.
Yeah.
Is that like this little girl vampire befriends this little boy human. And she's a cis girl. So like that in itself already fucking different.
That also really upsets me because it's just one of those things. Well, yeah, no, I know, but it's just like, that's part of why I didn't want to watch it. Cause I'm just like,
yeah,
you're going to do that in this time of like trans people are under attack and you have this non-gender conforming character and you're going to turn them into a cis girl because it's just
easier,
I guess. Yeah. You know, hand wave, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't know. I'm so over adaptations that take like three things from the source material and then change literally everything else, but still use the name. It's like, we don't need this. No, thank you.
Right. Right. Like I wouldn't mind like probably like a Swedish adaptation of a TV show. Cause I bet they would do it justice.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way they could kind of expand a little bit more with the characters that didn't get too much screen time. But even then, like, I still feel like we got a really decent adaptation with the original film.
Yeah. Well, and if you want to make a TV show, there are a lot of ways to do it where you're either continuing the story of
which
like
I would prefer
Ely and Oscar, or you're just having, you know, maybe expanding how Ely has survived up until she meets Oscar and then meets Oscar and then goes from there. Like there are ways to do it to extend the story so it can last for the duration of a TV show without completely changing literally everything about it.
Right. I would love a continuation. Now, obviously, it would have to be sort of like either a one and done, or they'd have to film it very quickly, or they would have to hire actors who just have to look very childlike, but who are indeed like young adults, you know, uh-huh. because of the growing aspect. But yeah, I'd love that. But yeah, this show was not let the right one in. And honestly, I believe that that contributed to it getting canceled because so many people were like, this isn't let the right one in. What the fuck, you know? And the very thing that they were hoping to capitalize on and make it popular is actually probably what ended up getting it the axe, is because so many people were upset that it wasn't like really being given a serious look at because it wasn't being classified as a vampire show in its own right.
Yeah, exactly. Because it makes it hard if you're trying to capture the fan base of an existing property with something that's completely different than the existing property while you're calling it that. And then you also want to capture new people. And what happens is if you totally change everything, I mean, sometimes it works, but a lot of times it just means no one likes it because the people who came in for the original thing are like, this isn't my thing. And the people who came in for, you know, just ooh, vampire show are like, eh, I don't really get what's going on and I don't understand why. So it just creates a lot of confusion. It can work in some cases, I guess. I mean, I know True Blood was really popular. Obviously, that was very different than the books. But I think a lot of book fans also kind of accepted that show as just like, this is fun, but it's completely different in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if you can get people that far, and that show didn't even change as much as some of these shows we're seeing now, where they literally just change everything and you're like, wait, what? So I don't know.
Right.
It's not my favorite trend in media adaptations, though. I gotta say, not a huge fan of it. Would love it if people would adapt things and try and stick truer to the source material. Again, like The Last of Us.
Yeah.
Just saying, it can be done.
Now so. Gonna be like the shining gold beacon of what an adaptation can be.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, we're getting that with a lot of vampire stuff, but maybe someday.
I know.
Maybe someday. Well, thank you for sharing your thoughts on that. I was kind of curious about it, but again, I just was not in a place where I could sit through it. So I'm glad that you did, so I don't have to.
Oh, always happy to take one for the team, Tori. Always happy to take one for the team. And this has been our first episode of Vampire Bites.
Yeah, we hope you enjoyed this little mini-sode, and we'll be back soon.
This is Tori and Chell wishing you a fangtabulous evening with vampire wishes and batty nightmares.
This podcast was edited by me, Tori. Our music is edited and mixed by Vikra the Never Living and includes Dark Halloween Night by Chase Allen Willis and Toccata and Fugue in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach, performed by Kevin MacLeod.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you really want to join our hellish crusade, please leave us 5 stars on Apple and Spotify. Be sure to tell your favorite blood-sucking fiends about vampires ruined my life.